Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is George Ferrer, who is the founder and executive director of Open Debates, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working to reform the presidential debates so that they better serve the interests of the American people. He's the author of No Debate, How the Republican and Democratic Parties Secretly Control the Presidential Debates. Welcome to Background Briefing, George Ferrer.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
And it's pretty clear that that the game is rigged, that the two parties have taken it over. They took it over from the League of Women Voters. And when did that happen? Back in the 1980s, wasn't it?
Exactly. The League of Women Voters ran the presidential debates and did a fantastic job with it from 1976 until 1984. And they were on the verge of sponsoring the 1988 presidential debates when the commission absolutely seized control and has permanently run the presidential debates ever since.
And this commission is made up of whom?
It's remarkable. The Commission on Presidential Debates is unequivocally a tool of the two major parties. It was created by the Republican Party and the Democratic Party jointly. They actually ratified an agreement in 1986 to, quote, take over the presidential debates. And currently, there are two co-chairs. One is Frank Fahrenkopf. He's the former chair of the Republican Party and the nation's leading gambling lobbyist. And the other one is Mike McCurry, the former press secretary to Bill Clinton and a partner at a lobbyist firm in Washington. And these two gentlemen run the Commission on Presidential Debates, which is not, as it sounds, a government agency, but actually a private corporation, and make judgments about who can and cannot be seen on the most critical forums in our country.
So what, I know you're working to reverse this, but what can be done to overturn this rigged system that weakens that has weakened the format from the days of the League of Women Voters, so it's much more staged and less spontaneous, and you don't get more of a chance to find out who these people are, limiting the number of debates? There's only three, right?
Right, three presidential, one vice presidential.
And then excluding third-party candidates. So let's walk us through those three.
Well, I think a fascinating way to understand just how bad things have got is to see how fantastic things were under the League. You know, so the League of Women Voters is a wonderful nonprofit, kind of true American, old-school nonprofit that's committed to the democratic process. It serves no interest other than the voters' education. And they've consistently stood up to the major parties when the major parties have imposed rules and regulations that come at the expense of our democratic process. For example, in 1980, former Republican Congressman John Anderson decided to run as an independent for president. He was gathering substantial attention in the polls, a substantial amount of money, but President Jimmy Carter, then president at the time, absolutely refused to debate him. And the League chose to stand up to the President of the United States. Rather than disinvite John Anderson, they held a debate between Republican nominee Ronald Reagan, the independent candidate John Anderson, and an empty chair to signify the President of the United States wasn't going to be there and should have been there. And at the beginning, it's immediately clear from 1980 and from then on that the League was not going to mess around. They were going to stand up to the candidates and be our advocate in the negotiating room. If you fast forward 4 years later, the Walter Mondale and Ronald Reagan campaigns attempted to manipulate the format and get rid of all the difficult questions. The League proposed a number of journalists to ask questions during the debates. But Walter Mondale's campaign and Ronald Reagan's campaign vetoed 80 of the suggestions in a row that the League proposed. Well, the League was outraged. They didn't acquiesce to the candidates' proposals. Instead, they held a press conference and lambasted the candidates for abusing the process and trying to get rid of difficult questions. So, of course, the candidates for the next debate, with their tails between their legs, had to accept the League's proposals. And finally, the third kind of example of the League standing up for our interest in the face of overwhelming party oppression, in 1988, the two candidates negotiated a contract, a secret contract that would dictate how the debates would be structured. And they handed it to the League, Ian, and they said, League, implement this. And the league said, are you kidding me? We're not going to implement this contract. This is anti-democratic. This prohibits follow-up questions and eliminates the capacity for actual debate. And instead, they published the actual contract, held a press conference, and said they would not be an accessory to the hoodwinking of the American people. That's a direct quote. Well, of course, this was perfect for the commission, which had been created 2 years earlier. They were just happy being an accessory to the hoodwinking of the American people and assumed control over the presidential debates by implementing that contract. And ever since 1988, every 4 years, negotiators for the major party campaigns get to get behind closed doors and negotiate these secret contracts that dictate how the debates will be structured, how many debates there will be, how the formats will be structured, and who can participate. And as a result, we're all paying an enormous price.
So in 88, that was George H.W. Bush and Dukakis, right? And,
exactly.
And that was, of course, that would have been done by that woman who's on CNN all the time, ran his campaign. No, actually, it was Susan Estrich, the Quisling Democrat on Fox News. So, that doesn't surprise me. By the way, when you mentioned Carter being an empty chair, it's worth noting that Carter lost to Ronald Reagan, right?
He did. He did, and in no small part because he looked very cowardly avoiding that critical debate. That's what the league could do. It could leverage public opinion, civic group opinion, and press opinion on their behalf, because who's going to oppose their fundamentally democratic mission, which is for inclusive and aggressive debates? And the commission does the exact opposite. Rather than marshal the support of the public, it spits in the face of public opinion. It excludes candidates that the majority of voters want to see. It eliminates challenging formats that might threaten or antagonize the candidates. And it confines the number of debates. Every single contract that the major party candidates have drafted under the commission's tenure has explicitly stated that the candidates will only participate in the three debates hosted by the Commission on Presidential Debates, meaning all the other civic groups out there, from the NAACP to the NRA, are fundamentally precluded from actually hosting a debate, which is ridiculous. At a time where we're facing stubbornly high unemployment, a massive fiscal crisis, very difficult foreign policy changes, why should we be rationing debates? It doesn't make any sense, Ian.
Again, I'm speaking with George Ferrer, who is the founder and executive director of Open Debates, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working to reform the presidential debates so that they better serve the interests of the American people. He's the author of No Debate, How the Republican and Democratic Parties Secretly Control the Presidential Debates. Now, I host the UCLA Hammer Forum in Los Angeles, and we had a couple of third-party candidates, Rocky Anderson and Buddy Roma, recently, and Buddy Roma was in this race on the Republican side, and he qualified for the debates, but they kept changing the rules, and they kept arbitrarily making it more and more difficult to keep him out of the race, because you know he set a limit of $100 per a donor, and was trying to run as a principled independent candidate, but they wouldn't let him on the stage. And I know why, because he was very effective.
The commission, one of the most effective propaganda tools that the commission deploys is the argument about third-party candidates. If you say to the commission, hey, your criteria, which, by the way, is 15%, in order to get into a debate hosted by the Commission on Presidential Debates, you must be polling on average at 15% in the polls. If you say to them, wait a minute, that's too high. You know, if you win 5% of the vote, Congress has stipulated that you get millions of dollars in taxpayer funds. Why should the standard to get in the debates be three times higher than the standard to actually get taxpayers' funds? It doesn't make any sense to have taxpayers financing a candidate that they can't even see. And if you confront the commission with this evidence and other evidence that suggests that candidates should be included, they say, oh, wait a minute. There are hundreds of crazy third-party candidates out there, from, you know, Billy Joe Craig of the Craig Won't Pull Your Leg Party to Bob Crustacean of the Crustacean Liberation Party, and we can't have a stage that accommodates 200 candidates all spouting nonsense. Ian, this is absolute myth. It's not true. The reality is there has never, in the last 100 years, been more than 7 candidates in a given election year that have qualified to even be on enough ballots to actually have a mathematical chance of winning the presidency. So even if you invited all of them, you'd have 7. And if you just say, wait a minute, why don't we let the American people decide? Instead of the commission, some private secretive corporation, let's ask the American people, who do you want in the debates? Well, when they're asked, they've never wanted more than 4. They've always, you know, they wanted Ralph Nader in the debates, they wanted Pat Buchanan in the debates, they wanted Ross Perot. they're not going to select candidates that aren't having any popular support. So it's very arrogant and fundamentally anti-democratic for the commission to be arguing that somehow we as voters are incapable of selecting the participants in these forums.
Well, Perot did get in. That was the last time there was a third candidate in a debate, wasn't it?
Yeah, and to me, the story of what happened next is arguably the most fascinating story in presidential debate history. You know, in 1992, Perot gets in, and he gets in only because President George H.W. Bush somehow thought that Perot would take more votes away from Clinton than him, and it ended up being a costly mistake strategically. Well, fast forward 4 years later, Perot was widely seen as the winner of the 1992 presidential debates, and as a result of the amount of votes that he got, he qualified for $37 million in taxpayer funds for 1996. 73% of the American people wanted to see him in the 1996 presidential debates when he ran again for office. But Bob Dole and Bill Clinton hatched a secret agreement to keep Perot out. Dole was desperate to keep Perot out because he thought that Perot would take more votes away from him. And Bill Clinton, who was comfortably leading in the polls, didn't want anyone watching the debates. George Stephanopoulos told me he wanted it to be a non-event. And so here's the deal they hatched. Clinton agreed to exclude Perot on the condition that they canceled one of the three debates and scheduled the remaining two debates opposite the World Series of Baseball. And so what you have is voters turn on the TV, there was no Perot, you had two debates instead of three, follow-up questions were banned, and those two debates were scheduled opposite the World Series, all because the Dole and Clinton campaigns had secretly concocted this negotiated contract. And no one had any idea because the private corporation called the commission took the heat and concealed the contract. To me, that's an outrage.
Well, just in the last minute then, George Ferrer, the Commission on Presidential Debates just announced a selection of CNN's Candy Crowley, PBS's Jim Lehrer, and CBS's Bob Schieffer as the moderators of the three presidential debates, and ABC's Martha Raddatz will host the one and only vice presidential debate. A lot of people are yawning at that. It's those choices. Why not have people like Keith Olbermann and Rush Limbaugh? Why stick to these establishment figures?
For the very simple reason that candidates are by definition risk averse and they're terrified of difficult questions where they might stumble on camera. And so long as the candidates are exerting this much control over the process, they're going to make sure that no one like Keith Olbermann or, you know, the late Tim Russert, who was maybe more mainstream and had the courage to ask difficult questions, is ever going to moderate an actual presidential debate. It's not going to happen so long as the candidates are controlling the process because they're terrified to look foolish on camera. So instead, you end up with Jim Lehrer, who's hosting the presidential debates for the 12th time and whose questions are absolutely predictable. So the candidates can memorize responses before the debate and just unload their 30 or 90-second sound bites during the debate rather than actually be challenged on their record or forced to actually talk to each other.
Well, George Ferrer, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with George Ferrer, who is the founder and executive director of Open Debates, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working to reform presidential debates so that they better serve the interests of the American people. He's the author of No Debate, How the Republican and Democratic Parties Secretly Control the Presidential Debates. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Farah Mohammed. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, and I'll be back on Sunday at 11 with another background briefing. Bye for now.